4K OSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics. Returning for a new season, we are so excited to welcome back Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Guys, after the summer of political news, I just want to say how happy I am to have you two back.
We're back.
We're here.
So good. Well, so after the state Supreme Court shot down a $1.50 per pack fee as unconstitutional, Governor Fallon called a special session to deal with the now $215 million hole in the budget. House Speaker Charles McCall says he will call again for a vote on the cigarette tax. But Ryan, Democrats are wanting more in this.
Well, there needs to be more. And this was totally predictable. We talked about it on this show. I don't know how many times leading up to the actual vote on the appropriations bill that led to the cigarette tax, that led to the Supreme Court decision to where we are today. So this isn't a surprise. My hope is that the legislators didn't take the summer off. You know, they've had all this time. They knew that this was a likely outcome from the Supreme Court. They knew that this $215 million, and then when you combine with federal matching dollars, more than half a billion dollars is what they're really looking at in terms of the shortfall there as a result of this decision, and not really as a result of the decision. It was a result of their poor legislative planning and that got us here to begin with. So they've got this entire session or this entire summer to work. I'm hoping that they're coming to the table with things more than just the cigarette tax and more than just a backup of we'll send that to the vote of the people if we can't pass it. Or as the alternative, I mean, the Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce is saying at the very least reallocate the cuts. That's a terrible idea. If that's all they can get done, then that's a real sad position that the state of Oklahoma is in right now.
Neva.
Well, and we're back where we started, like you say, Ryan. It's kind of the same song, another verse, and it will be interesting to see what the will of the lawmakers is after having been back home over the summer, having heard from, I think, their constituents, having seen just the general climate out there, even in these special elections, it's been noticeable, the ire of the voter across the board about what's going on and what's not going on. So will they come in quickly, do the short-term fix that needs to happen to deal with just this $215 million, or will they get mired in the age-old debate of, is it more taxes or cut spending and that whole dialogue? And I think that's the big question, because we've not really seen a plan put forth. I mean, the governor's made this call. Leadership is still not really saying we have a plan and this is what we're going to push for, and we believe we can get the votes, either partisan or bipartisan. So I think that if one were to guess, you would have to think that lawmakers are going to want to be in quickly and out, and they've got a window. If they go in on this time frame, they've got to be out in a couple of weeks, because they're going to shut the Capitol down and turn the electricity off, and so they've got a date certain that they've got to be out of the building, and whether that means that they can get it done or not, we'll just have to wait and see.
People talk about wanting to throw lawmakers out. This is really going to happen right now. Now, there, you know, the other thing that people talk about, and Republicans and Democrats have floated this over the years, is a budget-only session. Well, that's kind of what this special session is this budget-only session.
True, but you're talking really about this stripped out $215 million that really the impact is on four agencies, big areas. I mean, the Healthcare Authority, DHS, DMH, and the ABLE Commission. So they have funds that they could clearly go in, target plus the rainy day, and probably take care of the immediate issues at hand and not have to address these bigger issues. Now, will they do that? That I think that's the question in my mind.
Well, Democrats will allow that, because it's just that's what they're saying. They want more than just that. They want
gross production on the table. They want they want maybe a marginal increase in the upper income tax bracket. You know, those may be
issues that they have to fight in the session starting in February, as opposed to a special session, or maybe this just drags on infinitum and we never see an end.
You know, it's a good plot device for us for the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years.
Exactly.
You know, you said that legislators are hearing from this back home. One of the things that would be interesting, and what we haven't really seen out of this governor, is the use of her political capital. If the governor would go into these legislative districts in advance of this special session, if there's a plan and the governor gets behind this plan and she goes out and actually campaigns in these legislative districts, I think that we could really see some minds
change. And if the call really specifically calls for revenue increases, I mean, once again, the governor may be at loggerheads with many of the Republicans in these districts and the Republican lawmakers who, you know, may not be hearing that hard a push for that particular idea to fix the problem.
President Donald Trump dropped a bomb on the so-called Dreamers with his six-month plan to end DACA. Oklahoma's junior Senator James Lankford wasted no time in defending DACA by saying children shouldn't be punished for their parents' actions. Neva, it's now up to Lankford and his colleagues to decide the program's future.
Well, and I think he's made it clear that that this is an issue that Congress needs to address, that this shouldn't be, in the words of some of these senators, just executive fiat. I mean, it's not something that whether you agree or do not agree with what Obama did during his term or what Trump is saying he wants to see perhaps in his term. The bottom line is Congress needs to have the will, and I think there is a growing sentiment that this is something that's long overdue. We have an out-of-date immigration policy. We've got to resolve these issues, not only with strong border enforcement, but how we're going to deal with immigration, period. And, you know, and Senator Lankford's been clear. This is not a new statement for him this week. I mean, he's been clear on his position on this, and we'll just see how this moves forward, and hopefully very quickly in the Congress.
Certainly this would put more power behind DACA if Congress were to pass something, but the whole reason Obama did this was because Congress was refusing to pass anything.
Well, like Congress had an opportunity to pass something called the DREAM Act that failed in Congress. Oklahoma's congressional delegation voted against that. That was a non-starter.
Obama that was back in 2012. Yeah, so right. I mean, we've had some time pass.
Yeah. So Obama wanted to do something to provide some security for these students and some certainty. And what they got is a grand bargain. They said that if you'll give us your information, if you'll register with the government, if you'll go through a criminal background check, if you'll work hard, if you'll go to school, if you'll serve in the military, we've got these folks that are first responders, they're serving overseas, they're going to colleges and universities, they're working in our communities. Around 8,000 Oklahomans, 7,000 to 8,000 Oklahomans are currently recipients of deferred action status and not subject to deportation, who will, over the next several months, have that their life turned upside down. Their lives are already turned upside down. You have students that are afraid to go to school. You have parents that are worried that whenever they drop their kids off and they go to work and they come back, are their kids going to be there? Are they going to be there? It's a terrifying moment. It's morally reprehensible of the president to do this. It's built upon a false crisis that was manufactured politically to speak to his base, to his xenophobic base. And I think that what we're seeing now is a devastating public policy. I think Senator Lankford, I applaud. I wish that he would have stood behind DACA until Congress had done something. But I really appreciate him stepping out and saying Congress needs to act and they need to act quickly.
Do you think Congress can do something, Neva?
I think there's the possibility. I think there's a very real possibility. And I think that, you know, Americans, by and large, do not want to see a policy that holds children legally responsible for something that their parents did. I mean, I think this is the overarching question that I think Congress needs to, you know, really seize and once and for all not only address DACA, but address the entire long-standing problem with immigration, period. And this is a bipartisan issue. This is an American issue, and it's an issue that until we get it really forcefully addressed once and for all, it's going to be a problem that is unnecessary and long overdue to be settled.
Last week, President Trump announced he would nominate Tulsa Congressman Jim Bridenstine to head the space agency NASA. The move got bipartisan disapproval from both of Florida Senators Republican Marco Rubio and Democrat Bill Nelson. Ryan, this doesn't look very promising for Bridenstine.
Well, no, and whenever you've got bipartisan opposition and opposition from Senator Nelson, who's the ranking member of the committee that's going to be the first committee to hear the nomination in the United States Senate, it doesn't look great. And, you know, I think that Representative Bridenstine has spent almost every day since the inauguration of President Trump positioning himself for this appointment. This is something that he's wanted to do. Now, at the end of the day, his I think that he's demonstrated this interest in the space program, but he doesn't have a resume that backs that up. He's not a scientist. He hasn't worked in any sort of an organization of this size and managed an organization of this size. He has, I think one of the bigger question marks for him is that he doesn't believe in man-made climate change. You know, NASA is responsible for a lot of the scientific experiments that measure and observe the Earth's climate and record changes there that are important to measuring climate change. If you've got somebody who doesn't believe that that's actually occurring, that's difficult to imagine them as the head of that agency.
Neva.
Well, it will be an interesting, I think, Senate confirmation process. Mm-hmm. And like you say, I mean, not only do you have Senator Nelson making statements, but Senator Rubio, who is also on that committee, and clearly someone who has had at least some political ire with Congressman Bridenstine back in the campaign. I mean, mm-hmm. he made a number of comments when Rubio was still in the presidential primary season, and then Bridenstine, who was a big Cruz supporter, you know, immediately came on the Trump team and was on that bandwagon through the rest of the campaign. So when we see the political numbers, I mean, I think it will be a very intense Senate confirmation process, but the potential is still there, certainly to get the votes from a partisan standpoint, if nothing else. And I think it is fascinating when you see that if he is confirmed, he would be the first elected politician in that job, like you say. I mean, typically it's been a scientist or someone with a different background, but there's a changing changing disposition in this White House in terms of what they want to see out of NASA and future programs. So Bridenstine may really set up to be the person who best reflects what the administration wants to see and who they want to see as someone directing NASA for the time that the Trump administration's in place.
So much for draining the swamp and putting politicians into places. You know, but, you know, yeah, I think that you're right. You know, he is a politician. He's not a scientist. His resume is very short. He has an interest in space. I have an interest in space. I'm going to shed a tear next week when the Cassini spacecraft crashes into Saturn. I watch Carl Sagan videos. I've got the pulsar and planetary maps from the Pioneer plaque tattooed on my back. And I don't think that you know,
okay.
makes me, NASA administrator
weird,
material,
but, okay.
but if, but if, you know, Trump was
listening,
you can find
me. I just saw the eclipse.
So we all saw the eclipse. Everybody who saw the eclipse could be eligible if you've been in the state legislature or something. We need a scientist or at the very least an administrator there to ensure that the important mission of NASA moves forward.
In his time, however, in his three terms in Congress, he has been someone who clearly has focused on this area in terms of trying to promote a number of bills successfully. I mean, he's been someone certainly that's articulated modernizing the space program and doing things in terms of commercial space frontier, and even advocated things specific to where we are relative to China and Russia and all of these other countries and where they are in their space program. So, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of things come out. I think it's going to be a very interesting debate. I think it's going to be a very antagonistic climate for sure when he goes before the Senate confirmation process, and he's certainly going to have his A game going to be able to hold on to the folks he needs, even in his own party, to get the job done.
And an open congressional seat right here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, right. Well, which of course then opens up there's a whole bunch.
And
of
And I think that congressional seat, I think the president had 72% or something the vote out of that district. So clearly, I think Republicans anticipate that the opportunity to hold on to that seat will be very good.
But even before that, there's already, what, five Republicans?
Right.
Just for next year.
Right.
So this could be an interesting race if he does actually get appointed.
Yeah.
Former Attorney General and now head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, faces an investigation over travel back to the Sooner State. The EPA's Office of Inspector General says he's starting the preliminary investigation over complaints Pruitt's travel came at taxpayer expense. Neva, your thoughts on this news?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it's partisan driven, clearly. A lot of it are folks that and groups that are very much against the philosophy of not only this administration, but certainly what what Scott Pruitt has articulated as the new EPA administrator. I think we can look at this and see a lot has been said about the fact that his predecessor made not as many trips, kind of in the same time frame, but paid for her own trips back home to Boston, where she lived, where her husband stayed during the time that she was in Washington. I think there's a natural vetting process, and there's a natural way to get through this to see if, in fact, these expenditures were proper. I think that we have to say, if everyone wants to argue that every time any administrator, any executive in an administration, director or head takes a trip, that it's going to be somewhat with this cloud of uncertainty that it's political or it has something behind it other than just doing their job, I think that's regrettable. I mean, I think there is a process. I think that they will move through this process and see. But on the surface, it seems to be more smoke than anything else.
Ryan.
Scott Pruitt could end a lot of this by immediately coming out and saying that he will unequivocally not run for U.S. Senate, that he's not going to run for governor, that this is off the table, that these allegations are unfounded. He hasn't done that. You know, he does the typical political...
Has anyone in any similar position, I think, been asked to in a Democratic or in a Republican administration. I think that's kind of a sidebar deal to me.
But
to
if you're going to spend thousands of dollars, including one ticket that was over $1,000, and that's something else entirely. I hope that the Inspector General's office, at least in their report, mentioned something like kayak.com or Priceline or something, because $1,000 to get from Oklahoma City to Washington, D.C. or vice versa is kind of out there. I mean, that's your, $5 million
toilet
seat.
That's not getting your 5-day or 7-day or 14-day timing, for sure.
But, Scott Pruitt's been embattled ever since he's been there, and rightfully so. I mean, here's, again, that President Trump put a politician without any expertise other than the expertise of the industry that was the subject of the regulation here in a position to guard the hen house. And he's been doing that. He's been opposed by the career staff there. He's been opposed by environmental groups. He's been exposed by organizations around the country for being in bed with the very industries that he's supposed to regulate. And now he's using this time he's spending an extraordinary amount of time back home. And that is a deviation from past administrations, Republicans and Democrats. And so you're right. There's a process. The Inspector General is going to look at this. I'm hoping that we'll see a report. The IG's office and these federal agencies have traditionally been very independent, and we're going to see, hopefully, again, some sort of independent report from them that either finds wrongdoing and suggests ways to hold him accountable or absolves him of anything.
And even admittedly, if this were a Democratic appointee, then this would be this. And there was thoughts of he was using taxpayer dollars to travel. I mean, there'd be a lot.
I think you've got this give and take. Well. This is a highly charged partisan attack for the most part. I think we see this in every change of administration. I think we saw it. You look back in any recent changing of the guard, you're going to see this with the new folks that come on board that take over these agencies and have a different way of doing business. And certainly, I mean, Scott Pruitt, as we know, even through his confirmation process, I mean, he was someone who had a target, I mean, on his back by these groups that are absolutely opposed to everything that he now represents and what the Trump administration wants to see.
You know, Republicans often run for office saying that they want government to run more like a business. He was out of his office 43 out of 92 days from March to May. I don't know a single CEO. We're recording downtown Oklahoma City. You look at the titans of industry down here. I don't know a single CEO down here that could be gone 43 out of 92 days shortly after taking
the
job.
We're not saying he's 43 days on vacation. We're saying he's 43 days out of the office in Washington, D.C., may well be having meetings of great importance with whether it's industry folks or anyone that's certainly germane to his job and his role as EPA administrator. So I think that's a very bogus argument in the mix.
On Tuesday, voters in Oklahoma City are voting on a $967 million bond, which includes the extension of a penny sales tax and bonds to put money into public safety and street repairs. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this election?
Yeah, I assume it will pass. I mean, it's got a solid campaign behind it. The campaign's largely run by the Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce. And I think that if there are any criticisms of the plan that folks are looking at, Councilman Shadid's brought this up multiple times. It's that the agenda and the the slate of questions that the voters in Oklahoma City are going to consider is largely determined by the Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce, though, because they're the group that will come together, put together the flashy ad campaign. They'll run all of the marketing. They'll find the money to make sure that there are TV ads, radio spots, newspaper buys, the whole thing. And, you know, that's important for the council if they want to pass something like this. And so they are setting that agenda in a way that circumvents both the city council and perhaps the people of Oklahoma City. You know, that said, I think that the questions themselves that the voters are going to consider will likely pass. I mean, largely as a result of that campaign, and I think largely as a result of voter satisfaction with the previous MAPS campaigns.
Neva?
I think that's right. I mean, this is one of those ballots. I mean, you have 15 boxes to check, right, whether you check yes or no for the propositions. You have 13 propositions, two ordinances. But Ryan is right. I mean, basically, this is a package that when you look at it from a voter standpoint, what they have to say is, do we want safer streets? Do we want better public safety? Do we want all of the amenities that we like to see in a community that makes it someplace where you want to build and grow and have a business, raise a family, those sorts of things? So the 10-year bond package, I mean, has things in it such as funding not only public safety, parks, libraries, streets, I mean, all of those things. But then you also have the component with the temporary sales tax and the quarter cent sales tax that are going to allow for additional police and fire to be hired, something that, frankly, the city is long overdue, I mean, behind the curve in terms of hiring and the need to have these extra firefighters and police officers on the streets. So I think we'll see whether or not there hasn't been much of an anti-campaign that I've seen anywhere across the city. It's certainly nothing organized. So This will be who turns out the folks, like we say in any election where you have a low voter turnout. Yeah, well. And obviously there is a very strong concerted effort to paint the picture of what this what these proposals do, where the money would be spent, and I would have to say that barring something very unusual right here at the end, that this would pass fairly easily.
Well, one of the biggest complaints about MAPS 3, I believe, was that it was one big bulk thing instead of dividing it out. Well, they finally got it divided out. The thing I'm wondering about, though, is when it says, oh, we're going to make streets safe, we're going to build up streets, we're going to repair the streets, is that sounds really good, but if you're only repairing streets, say, in Northwest Oklahoma City, but in Northeast Oklahoma City, where the streets are really bad, where you've got more poor neighborhoods, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be fair across the board.
Well, I think that's where you have to think about the input of the city council and the representation by wards, and these folks are there to represent their constituents, make sure their streets are being taken care of, being fixed, making sure that they have proper numbers of police and fire, in proximity. So I think there's a kind of a safety net there, if you want to call it that affords the opportunity for those things to be handled once it passes, if it does, and they can move forward.
You can tell if you're a priority for the political powers that be by how nice your streets are. You know, I ride a bike around Oklahoma City a lot, and I can tell you real quick which wards, which streets, which neighborhoods are the priority for the political powers that be and which aren't. And you can figure it out real quick.
I think over time, though, when you look at the city at large, I mean, I think when they have had good representation on the council, good representation at the county level, I mean, the folks that have issues, I mean, they have a way to get to these folks who are their elected, their elected voices, respectively, in these areas, and get something done. So if something is totally void of being looked at, then, yeah, that's a big issue. But by and large, I don't think we've seen that in Oklahoma City overall.
And that's where I think, Councilman Shidi, whenever he's talking about greater input, that right now what you see is a disproportionate amount of power that the Oklahoma City Chamber has in this entire process. Also on that September 12th election, on that ballot, Oklahoma County Sheriff, one of the most consequential elections for Oklahoma County, or for the state anyways. We're going to replace a very long-term sheriff in John Wetzel, you know, three candidates on the ballot. You know, this individual, whoever wins this race, will be one of the primary players and the overall effect of the Oklahoma criminal justice system in the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, either way, if you're in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma County, go out and vote, because nothing's probably more important than what's going on right now. It's so good to have you guys back. Thank you so much.
It's nice. They took me out of the cryogenic freezer.
It's hard to believe it's been 10 weeks.
You're just sitting right next to Walt Disney. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.